Thank you very, very much. Madam President and friends, yes, I chose what was to be sung before I was to speak and what was to be sung after I finished. For I thought if I fell down on what I said in between those two songs, we would still have a great morning. When Dr. Porter Ruth wrote me a letter after our January dinner given in my honor, he said, "Alma, the only decent thing for you to have done that night was to have said, the services will be concluded at the cemetery." Mrs. Mathis said on that night that it was recorded and would be kept, and when the time came that we got ready to go to the cemetery, all we'd have to do is to run the tape through and pick up some of the lovely things that had been said. Well, today we can enlarge that service, for surely I would want a tape of all that has been said up to this time. You cannot know how grateful I am for your presence. When I saw Dr. Redford out there, I was greatly moved. I have looked out and have seen presidents of state unions in the early years when I served who have come. Some of them have told me they came all the way just because this was my last meeting as the executive secretary. There is a woman in the audience today who was on the nominating committee, maybe more than one, but this one and I have had correspondence all through the years laughing because she said on the first round 26 years ago she voted against me because she didn't know me. And she's been trying to make up to me ever since. We have a great love, courtship and marriage thing going on. And so she has come today in order to be here because to prove to me that she has loved me all these 26 years. She said if we had a vote, she'd see if she could stand up for me today. There are wonderful friends who have gathered here and how grateful I am to you for being here. I'm grateful to our president who told me some time ago that she wanted me to have time this morning to say what I wanted to say to you. I was delighted because I knew by this hour I would be full to the brim of things that I wanted to say from my mind and things that just sprang from my heart. But the day came when I had to give a subject for the printed program. And so I settled down and decided I would surely have to take a little look back, but those who've come ahead of me today have done much of that looking back. And so I said, retrospect, and then look at the present today, introspect, and then let us look at the future together, prospect. Having announced the subject, I began to think about what I might put in to this message today. One day last week, Margaret Bruce, who was elected on the same day I was in Memphis nearly 26 years ago, more than 26 years ago, we were elected together. We arrived in Birmingham together on October the 1st of that year to take up our work. Margaret was doing some research in our building, and she telephoned my office and said, "Alma, you ought to look in the 1947 minutes to see about a speaker who had spoken that year that she thought might give me a start." Later in the day, I pulled the bound volume of the minutes from the shelves in my office, turned to 1947, and before I ever found what Margaret had referred me to, what do you think I found? I was reminded that that was a year when Miss Juliet Mather, the young people's secretary in that day, had invited me along with four other women to speak on the influence of YWA in our lives. Well, the very reminder of it brought back memories so hilarious to me that I just sat and laughed. I remembered that I arrived in St. Louis without a speech, not having realized how prophetic this was going to be of the many years that were to follow. My roommate for that occasion was Mrs. Walter Pope Benz, the wife of the president of William Jewell College. She had been my pastor's wife back in Roanoke, Virginia, and we had gone to this meeting with great excitement together. Mrs. Benz knew I didn't have a speech. And so on Saturday evening after dinner, she bought herself a Sunday newspaper, and she said, "Alma, now I'll sit in the corner of the room and read, and I will sit up as long as you have to sit up tonight. I'll try to keep you awake until you get up that speech." Well, I sat there and looked at those minutes and laughed, and so I just telephoned Mrs. Benz, living in Arlington, Virginia today, and we had a good laugh together as we remembered that occasion. I was interested to see who those women were who were invited 27 years ago now to speak. One of them became a foreign missionary. One of them became a state WMU executive secretary. One of them became a state youth secretary. I lost track of one and didn't have time to check up on her. And the other one was Alma Hunt, Dean of Women, William Jewell College. Now listen to me. Would you believe that the five of us spoke to the Women's Missionary Union annual meeting on Monday morning, June 10, 1947, 27 years ago at this very hour. 1947 was not my first time to address the Women's Missionary Union annual meeting. In 1940, Miss Juliet Mather invited me to come and speak, again speaking on the influence of YWA, or frankly at that time on our YWA work. I turned the minutes back to 1940 and was reminded that on that occasion, I shared the spotlight with Elizabeth Hale, a missionary among the Chinese people in China and Malaysia until her retirement a few years ago, and with my great friend, Dr. R.P. Downey, a pastor in neighboring Salem, Virginia, who all his days gave strong leadership to RA work. Now, when Miss Juliet Mather invited me to speak on that occasion, I thought that this was a once-in-a-lifetime occasion. Surely never again would I come to the WMU annual meeting. My mother thought this, too. I spent a great deal of thought on what I should wear and finally purchased a dress. And then I went about to find a hat. One afternoon after school, for I was teaching then, I went into the city to look for a hat, found one I wanted, and felt I couldn't afford it. I went home and told my mother that I'd found a hat I liked, but it was just too high. And she said, go back and buy the hat. This is the only time in your life you'll ever speak to the WMU annual meeting. And you ought to be properly dressed. And so properly dressed, I went. Mrs. Benz had often told us as she worked with us in the church that when we made a public appearance, we should dress in our dressing rooms, and when we got to the platform, give no further thought to our clothes. Mrs. Benz didn't need to give me that admonition that day. I was far too scared to even think how that dress and hat looked when I came to that platform. I don't think in all my life I ever suffered so much. I can remember yet the people on the platform who tried to give me courage at that hour. When I arose, my only thought was if I could just live through it. And when we were through, I went out and met face to face my state executive secretary, Miss Blanche Sidner White. Miss White was not given to complimenting me, but rather to stretching me to my farthest proportion. And so I looked at her, and not wanting her to have to say anything to me, I said, I pray the Lord I'll never again attempt to speak. And she rose to her full height and said, my dear, I do not think the Lord is going to answer that prayer. Then I turned the pages in that bound volume of the minutes to 1948, the year that I was elected. And just looking at the minutes sent a chill down my spine. Oh, how frightened I was. The woman I read about in those minutes who was elected the executive secretary was not a speaker. As the committee had approached me and I had talked with them, I had said to the chairman, I am not a speaker. And she began to tell me all the things that would be my responsibilities other than speaking. She made those sound so big, and she said, in fact, you don't have to give the major attention to speaking, but rather to coordinating the work in the office and keeping things going. I said this to my wise friend, Dr. Walter Benz, as we talked about it. He listened and said nothing, and some hours later he rose in his study that night and he said, Alma, in the final analysis, that job is going to be a speaking job, and you keep this in mind. He was wiser than the chairman of the nominating committee. But as I read about this person who was elected executive secretary, I realized that I was not a speaker then, still fearful of this responsibility, still am today as far as that's concerned, and I was, though, a woman who had lacked experience in the state or Southern Baptist Convention Women's Missionary Union, but I had had wide experience in the local. And through the 17 years since my first YWA conference at Ridgecrest, I had come to know, to appreciate, and to love deeply the leaders of Women's Missionary Union in that day and the leaders in our convention. Would you believe it if I would tell you that on the day I was looking through those minutes, I got up from my desk after the office had closed, went to the file to see if I could find the notes that I had scribbled out for my response that day to Women's Missionary Union annual meeting, and I laid my hands on them the very first file I pulled out. Scribbled on a half of a piece of William Jewell College stationery that said over in the corner, Alma Hunt, Dean of Women. And I wondered how I ever got the courage to leave and looked at that piece of paper and realized it was the only remnant I have of that era in my life. There was nothing profound in that response. It was a simple statement of commitment to the people who are Women's Missionary Union and commitment to the purpose which is ours. It was a statement of confidence in the fact that there is no limit to what could be accomplished through our united efforts. Before I close the volume of minutes, I thumbed through the years just following my election and saw there the names of friends, women who had plowed the very finest of their contribution of leadership and influence and monetary response through Women's Missionary Union. Men also whose names were written there because of their confidence in WMU, their encouragement of us, and their leadership. I was not saddened when I saw how many of them have gone on to glory, but rather I was exhilarated by being reminded of the richness of our heritage. Now, planning this message required discipline. Without it, I knew I would never get away from retrospect and into introspect. Even with discipline, I found no sharp dividing line. And so I decided the simplest way to move ahead was to pull all of the living into introspect. To conclude that we are compassed about by so great a cloud of witnesses. To express gratitude to God for our heritage made strong by those who've gone before. To recognize that apart from them, we would not be here today, we would not be what we are today. And apart from us, the living, their work can never be made perfect. And so I pull you who are here today, those who work with you who are not privileged to be here today, Mrs. Mathis and Mrs. Fling, whose influence has been mighty in the past of Women's Missionary Union, into introspect, for their influence is vital in the life of WMU today. In moving into introspect, I feel compelled to paraphrase the scripture to say, we are compassed about by so great a company of co-laborers. Women giving leadership in state, associational, and church women's missionary unions. Men who are here today, men who were here last night. Men who help us in all walks of our life together. Pastors, superintendents of missions, state executive secretaries, state mission secretaries, and on our convention level, the missions boards. Many of the representatives here today, the Southern Baptist Convention, Dr. Ruth and his co-workers. And then, of course, I am mindful of the strong leadership we have today in the women who make up our own board and those who constitute our family in Birmingham. Introspect, according to Webster, means to look into. And just as Mrs. Mathis could hardly refrain from saying today that Texas, you know, look into the heart of Texas, we realize that Texans can look into the heart of Texas and know that it is good. I, in a much more serious vein, can look into the heart of Women's Missionary Union and know that it is good, for its purpose is closely drawn from the divine word that we have been reminded of earlier this morning. U.S. News and World Report, January 7, 1974, carried a page entitled, 74, A Crucial Year. And the article began, the year 1974 has sent its signals well ahead. It shapes up as one of the most crucial in decades. And then skipping, it said, suddenly it seemed to many Americans that their country was in danger of losing control of its own destiny. In such critical times, such crucial times, what does one hold to? Evidently, as I read that article, I had pen in hand, for I had written beside it, Jesus Christ, only panacea. My hope is built on nothing less, the hymn writer said to us, than Jesus' blood and righteousness. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil. I believe in Jesus Christ, our anchor. I believe in his command that we are to take the good news to all the world. I believe in his church. I believe in the organized church for the nurture of the members and the strengthening of our taking the word out into the world. I believe in Women's Missionary Union, which through its education and action programs enables members to have a recognizable share in the fulfilling of the Great Commission. Many are testing my statement about my belief in Women's Missionary Union. Several have asked, if you had to do over again, would you again link your life with Women's Missionary Union? And without hesitation, I say I would. I have been aware every day that my life has been linked with yours, that I have spent my energies in what I believe to be the greatest work on earth. Women's Missionary Union, not as an organization, but as a force for the fulfilling of the Great Commission, is worth the investment of one's most precious gift, most precious possession, life itself. I am grateful that Women's Missionary Union allowed me to be number 4 in the noble line of succession, Miss Annie Armstrong, Miss Edith Camel Crane, Miss Kathleen Mallory. To develop my part on introspect, I went back to the minutes to see if I could get a grasp of where the union was a quarter of a century ago. And surely any introspective message at that date should have carried the note of victory. But humility would have kept my predecessors and the leaders of Women's Missionary Union in that day from so labeling the results of their labor. Or perhaps they were not quite sure where they stood. For such evaluation can better be made from the perspective of history. For this reason, we cannot pass judgment on how history will record our present state. But we can look at it introspectively, for the signs such self-examination will surface. Some to encourage us, some to shake us from complacency. All, I pray, to motivate us to more committed service. We have poor measuring rods by which to evaluate the present status. We cannot compare membership in 1948 and today, or we can, from 806,000 to 1,102,000, but it is not a fair comparison, for in those years we suffered the loss of all RA members. One time when we transferred the organization, and then in 70 we suffered the loss of the 6, 7, and 8-year-old boys when we changed the age grading. Likewise, we cannot compare organizations, for we transferred RA organizations at one time, and then in 1970 we divided the existing 4 organizations into 5, and therefore you cannot make any comparison between these. We have no measuring rod to measure the results of mission action, except to talk to enthusiastic pastors who tell you that the women in their churches are involved in more significant mission action than they have ever been before. We have no measuring rod by which we can actually measure the results of our education program and our efforts to gain mission support, other than the testimonies we have of those who come out for appointment as missionaries and the results as they are seen in increased giving through the cooperative program and increased giving through the Lottie Moon Christmas offering and Annie Armstrong offering. You heard for yourselves last night the testimonies of missionaries. You've heard this morning the results of giving. Oh, how God has blessed us so wonderfully in the outpouring of gifts that have sustained, helped to sustain our mission work, have given us more opportunities as Southern Baptists to move out into this country of ours and into a greater number of countries overseas. Certainly, I would not want to indicate that all is bright with Women's Missionary Union. We have had the difficult years, as all church organizations have had them. The 60s was a very difficult time. The beginning of the 70s is a difficult time. I spoke to the furloughing missionaries last Friday evening, and I told them that had I retired before these hard times came, I would have thought I'd been a great success. It's been a very humbling experience to live through the very difficult recent years through which we have gone. Also, I would never have known how hard growth comes had I retired some years after I came here. For I came in just when our convention was caught up in a great missions advance. Dr. Rankin had challenged the convention with his message, retreat, mark time, advance. And the convention took up the advance theme, and we moved forward mightily over a period of years. It is good for us to know that all progress does not come easy. Dr. Elton Trueblood, twice an annual meeting speaker, has said that the last half of the 20th century is an exciting time to be alive if we know what time it is. And with this thought, I want us to look at prospect. It is an exciting time to be alive if we know what time it is. Last Tuesday in Birmingham, we were having a writers' conference for the writers who will write for Royal Service and Contempo. At the morning coffee break, I went up to visit with them, talked first with one and then with another, and finally I met with three of them and we were in conversation. Mrs. Fling's name came into the conversation, and one of those writers said, "You know, Mrs. Fling has had a tremendous influence in my life and she knows nothing about it." And I said, "How did that happen?" She said, "Years ago, I was living in Oklahoma. I was a nurse before I married, and I nursed all night one night in an Oklahoma City hospital. The next morning, I slept 2 hours and drove a distance to a WMU leadership conference. I was a YWA counselor, and when I got there, there was not a single other YWA leader there, and so there was to be no conference. Some discerning woman, seeing her disappointment, said to her, 'Why don't you come and go in Mrs. Fling's conference?' And she said, 'I have never told Mrs. Fling what that conference did for me. It changed my whole perspective. It caused me to have come to a turning point in my life.' And as she said what it meant to her, I thought I heard the voice of another woman and then another. For some years ago, I had heard Mrs. Robert Fling herself say that it was Mrs. William McMurray's mission study conference that caused her to have an about face in her life. And years before that, I had heard Mrs. William McMurray say it was mission study that had caused her to face up to her life's responsibility. Now, Mrs. Fling and Mrs. McMurray were Christian women, daughters of ministers, wives of pastors, but Women's Missionary Union program brought to them in adulthood a change in their lives. Yes, I believe Women's Missionary Union can change a woman's perspective. This morning, as Mrs. Fancher was speaking, I remembered that Mrs. Fling wrote for Royal Service one year, "The numbing routine of housework need not force women to accept the kitchen sink view of the world." I believe Women's Missionary Union lifts a woman's perspective above the kitchen sink or above the desk or the industry in which she works. To see a world in need and to see that she herself can have a part in it. I believe Women's Missionary Union enables women to be molders of circumstances rather than victims of circumstances. I believe that Women's Missionary Union gives a woman the opportunity to have the feeling I have had as I have worked with you, a feeling of having a part in the greatest work on earth. Yes, I agree, it is an exciting time to be alive because I believe that we do know where we are going. Last night backstage, I talked with Dr. James Sullivan about the prospects for the future, and I told him I had the feeling that we stood right on the brink of another great period of growth and forward thrust for Southern Baptists. And he said he would miss his guess if we were not right there, that everything that comes to him points to the hope, the encouragement that should be ours. I want to say to you that I think the hope of our future is as bright as the promises of God. In the North Carolina annual meeting this year, a woman reporter came to talk with me. She opened the interview by saying, "Miss Hunt, this past week, the women of another great denomination decided not to have longer a separate women's work. They felt that the Women's Lib movement had brought us to such a place that an organization for women was no longer needed. Will Women's Missionary Union of the Convention go in this direction?" And I told her we had no thought of folding up. We felt there was a great need for an organization for women, and we knew that our purpose is as challenging today as it was when our women came together in 1888 and organized for the support of missions at home and abroad. I moved from that state into the state of Virginia, and a man wanted to interview me there. The woman who was in charge of setting up the interviews had trouble finding a time when he was free and I was free, and finally she did not get him before I gave my message to the Virginia Union. As soon as it was over, she said, "If you'll wait here now, I want to call the reporter and see if he can come." She telephoned him, and he said, "No, I don't need to come. I heard Miss Hunt this morning from the balcony, and I don't need to talk with her. I know what she thinks." Now, what he wanted to know was, were we going to fold up here and decide we don't need Women's Missionary Union any longer? And so he went away disappointed, as the other had, for I had not given them newsworthy news. Keeping on with our tasks of mission study, mission support, mission action may not be exciting newspaper reporting, but it is exciting to the recipients of the benefits accruing from our program, and I believe it is exciting for every person involved in it. The prospects are bright. A word of commitment I would speak to you after 26 years. My day with Women's Missionary Union is not terminating with retirement. This morning on the telephone, I talked with Dr. Gardner Taylor, and he said, "Miss Hunt, I want to tell you what Dr. Trueblood said about retirement. He says retirement is not doing nothing. Retirement is choosing what you are to do. And I tell you today that I'll choose to do what you are doing. I pledge to you the same quality of loyalty that I have tried to give during the years I have been employed. You're sending me back into the field far better equipped than I came to you. And I pray and ask your prayers that I may find avenues through which I may be a good steward of the investment you and the mission boards have made in me." And now, a final word. Just as there are no two violins exactly alike, there are no two leaders exactly alike. And this is good. We do not question God's great wisdom in making us different. My successor will be different. She has her contribution to make, which with your love and your support will bring our beloved union to glorious flower. Enfold her in your love and write her name large on your prayer list, and I'll join you in doing so. The great hymn writer gave us the hymn that we chose for the hymn of the year about 2 years ago that concluded, "Grant us wisdom, grant us courage for the facing of these days. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage for the living of these days." And then that wonderful prayer in the last verse, "Set our feet on lofty places, gird our lives that they may be, armored with all Christ-like graces in the fight to set men free. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage that we fail not man nor thee. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage that we fail not man nor thee."
Oh, Jen. Hey, Fred, you sure look pretty today.